Traditional meeting, even though we are just about a minute behind start time, we did want to get started as soon as we could. So we're looking at least two of our members we know will be absent today. Senator Gordley and Senator Carter are up in Portland for the Martin Luther King tribute breakfast that is being held at the Oregon Convention Center. But hopefully we'll have our other members filter in here fairly quickly. And with that, you see on your agenda, we have Oregon Budget 101, overview of the Ways and Means process, and then review of budget information materials. And we'll start out first with Ken Rocco giving us the presentation on Oregon Budget 101.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ken Rocco, Legislative Fiscal Office.
Sure.
Before you should have binders that have a number of tabs that will cover what the committee is going to do over the next this week and next the first part of next week. Today we're going to cover the first two tabs. Right now in the second tab you have a set of materials that the Legislative Fiscal Office produced in calendar year 2004. And I think three that we've done so far this year. We do budget briefs during the year just to keep members informed on things that are happening in the world of budget. So there's a set of those, and they're usually topical of things that are happening at the time or for example, the position issue report we did is just in response to members' questions about positions, and I think that may be a useful document for you to review before the Department of Administrative Services comes later this week and to talk about position-type issues. What we'd like to start off with your educational process is to talk about the budget process, and to start with budget, what we call Budget 101, just to give you some terminology so that when you're in subcommittee and people start saying things, you have an idea what they're talking about. Many of you will already know all this stuff, so, but we felt it necessary to cover it for just so that we're all in the same starting place. As you probably realize, Oregon budgets on a
Representative Wisman.
Mr. Chair, do you want us to ask questions as we go? Can
yes, please. That would be excellent. As you know, probably, Oregon budgets on a biennial basis, which our budget period starts July 1 of an odd-numbered year, and it goes to June 30th of the next odd-numbered year. And that's not surprising, but what it means, I think what you need to remember is that means we're projecting expenses out in some cases for 28 months in the future. So this is one of the reasons why budgets change over time, because we're looking out into the future and expecting agencies to know how they're going to spend 28 months ahead. In many cases, agencies are expected to accommodate changes that happen. For example, if inflation goes up or gas prices go up or postage goes up, they're expected to live within their budget and just absorb those additional costs. So that's one of the issues of a biennial budget, I believe. When the legislature ends session, what we call the budget, we call it the legislatively adopted budget. During the interim, the emergency board can make adjustments to the budget, or the legislature can also make adjustments if they come in special session, or if they, right now, this assembly can adjust the 0305 budget. And when that happens, what we then call it the legislatively approved budget, because it's been changed from what the last legislature adopted. Your authority to balance to provide a budget is in the Constitution, Article 9, Section 4, which says no money shall be drawn from the Treasury but in pursuance of appropriations made by law. And since only the legislature can make law, that means that nobody can spend money unless the legislature tells them they can with law. So, appropriation bills are the ones that you'll be dealing with mostly in Ways and Means, and in they're usually agency specific, so we have one bill per agency. As you may recall, last session, at the end of session, we put numerous agency budgets into one bill. But in general, they start out at least one agency per bill. House bills will be the 5,000 series, and Senate bills in the 5,500 series. These bills are provided by budget management of the Department of Administrative Services, so right now they're reflecting what's in the governor's budget. And since that budget generally changes at some point in the session, you will be seeing amendments to the bill. So it's a rare thing to have a budget bill go through the process and not be amended. Oregon has about 100 agencies, and they range from very small, $60,000 biennial budget, to very large, over $9 billion. The $60,000 one is the State Board of Examiners of Licensed Dietitians. And the largest, of course, is the Department of Human Services. We also budget bonding and capital construction bills in separate bills from the agency budgets. And so when you look at the total expenditures of an agency, you have to remember to add in that capital construction, any capital construction that they may be planning. Article 9, Section 7 of the Constitution limits appropriation bills to state current expenses, and no other subject is allowed. And this language says, laws making appropriations for the salaries of public officers and other current expenses of the state shall contain provisions upon no other subject. And legislative counsel interprets this to mean that you cannot put substantive language in a budget bill. So when you see a budget bill, they're generally very boring bills. They have fund types and numbers. That's about it. That also prevents the legislature from trying to put a substantive provision in a bill and tying it to the allocation of dollars. It doesn't stop a regular bill, however. There was a court case that allows an appropriation or expenditure limitation to be put into a bill that establishes a new program. So you can have both the current expenses and the substantive language in a bill. But normally those come through the a non-Ways and Means committee. When we budget, we have four fund types: general fund, lottery funds, other funds, and federal fund. We track lottery separately from the general fund. It's really the way we define general fund lottery is more like an other fund, and for years it was included in the other funds category. And the Legislative Fiscal Office worked with budget management for several years to make sure it was split out separately because we wanted to be able to track lottery funds. The general fund is what we call fungible because the legislature can use it for just about anything it wants to use it for. Other funds and federal funds are usually dedicated to a specific type of use. Some examples of other funds would be fees for licenses and registration, like a hunting or a fishing license, or an occupational license, loan programs, payments for services. There's a very long list of other funds in the budget. And they also include some of the state's consumption taxes, like cigarette taxes are considered another fund. Other and federal funds are usually in what we call continuously appropriated funds. Yes.
Senator Walker.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Mr. Rocco, I have a question about the lottery funds. It's a little slow sinking in this morning, but you said it's more like other funds, but we track them now. There was a time we did not track the lottery funds, and now we do. And can you tell me when that is?
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, at one time we they were always tracked, but they were combined with our other funds category. So if you looked at an agency's budget, you wouldn't immediately see how many lottery funds they had.
Oh, I see.
So what we did was we made sure that they were identified separately. So now if you look at an agency, you will see lottery funds. If the agency gets lottery funds, you'll see it broken out specifically in the budget.
Okay. Thank you.
The other funds and federal funds are usually put into accounts that we call continuously appropriated, and that's in law, they are established and they are continuously appropriated. Legislative Council went through a very extensive review this interim of all the funds to make sure that was the case, because years ago funds may have been created and they didn't have that language in there, and it's important that they do have that language. So what that really means is that the legislature, you may hear sometimes people talking about the legislature gave other funds to an agency. Well, that's really not technically correct, because the agency by law is collecting the other fund's money. And what the legislature does is puts a cap on how much that agency can spend of those funds that they get. And that's called an expenditure limitation. Now, some federal funds are spent as other funds, and some general fund is also spent as other funds. If a general fund dollar is provided to one agency, and then that agency uses it to pay for a service of another agency, then the second agency calculates it as other funds. So there is some double counting of the budget. And I think that's a very important thing to remember if we are talking about any kind of a spending limit that is based on a calculation of just expenditures, because there are some significant double countings of dollars in the budget.
Ken, you want to give some examples of those assessments?
For example, the Attorney General spends most of its dollars from its assistant attorney general services. They spend that money as other funds. But an agency like the Department of Revenue will pay them with a general fund dollar. So it's counted once when the Department of Revenue pays for that service, and then it's counted in the attorney general's budget also as a dollar. So it's a double count. This also comes in with some of the lottery funds and how they're allocated.
The most important thing for the members, I think, out of the other funds discussion is that while for the most part our discretion is usually related to general fund and lottery fund allocations, about at least a third of the other funds are flow-through general funds. There are things we should be paying close attention to, and we're trying to find savings and efficiencies and for the taxpayers of the state of Oregon. So on the one hand, other funds are not as accessible, but about a third of those monies you want to look real carefully are pass-throughs that we want to make sure we use to best advantage.
One other thing to point out about lottery funds are that they are somewhat fungible in a sense, but there's some restrictions on what you can use them for, because by the Constitution they're dedicated to economic development, education, and right now parks and salmon salmon plan type activities. And this is one reason why we are looking into whether the proposal to use lottery funds for state troopers is it can be done in the budget or not. And we're still looking into that with Legislative Council. One other type of funds that are...
Yeah.
just, I'm sorry to interrupt, but another point that I'd like to at least drive home to members is that lottery funds, we've had a lot, we always get, and we have some already this session, proposals to use lottery funds to fund various capital construction programs. I think members sometimes assume that there's this extra amount of lottery money that we're not using, and therefore it's eligible to use as debt service for your favorite bonding program. The part that is accurate in that statement is that we have some, and we'll get a presentation on this, I think, later on, there's some debt serviceability within lottery-backed bonds. However, that debt serviceability is really not accessible unless you want to cut education. Because those quote excess lottery monies are actually being used to fund your K-12 budget. In most cases, usually we park the quote extra lottery money to balance our K-12 budget. So if you take money away to fund a community college project or a salmon restoration project or anything of that nature, it means you have to find money to backfill your K-12 budget from last session. So just keep that in mind as members approach you on a variety of bonding proposals.
So what's your point?
Well, Mr. Co-Chair, I think that you could make that statement about all of the money that flows into state government, that there are no pots of money sitting out there that aren't already allocated in some direction or another. And when you talk about moving money from one area to another area, you're creating a winner and loser situation, and you have to pay attention to that with great care.
One other thing that you'll see in budgets in the other funds and federal funds categories are they will be broken in some agencies into two types, limited and non-limited. Non-limited is it's a strange kind of a thing, but it's basically for expenses that an agency cannot avoid, can't stop, but doesn't know exactly how much they're going to be. I think the best example that we have of this is unemployment insurance payments, because they're required to be paid by law. We never know exactly how many people are going to be unemployed and how much their benefits are going to be. It's a non-limited expenditure. We still keep track of it, and it's still part of the budget, but we just don't set a absolute dollar limit on that particular expenditure category. Now, some terminology that we use, the legislature generally, what we do is appropriate general fund. We allocate lottery funds, and then we limit the expenditure of other and federal funds, and we do that through what you will hear as an expenditure limitation. The two other terms that you're going to hear, the Department of statute, the Department of Administrative Services can allot. What they do is an agency, when it gets a budget, it doesn't get access to all the money at once. The DAS sets up an allotment plan with the agency, and it's sort of a quarterly spending plan. And so every quarter they release a certain amount of the expenditure limitation or the appropriation to the agency to spend. And we call that the allotment authority. And occasionally you will hear the term unschedule or reschedule. And unscheduling is when we or DAS on their own or the legislature ask them to take a portion of the money away from the agency and don't let them spend it yet. And so that's called unscheduling. And then once certain conditions are met whatever the conditions are, that they can reschedule the money and then put it back into the allotment plan to allow the agency to spend that money. We do this a lot of times with federal grants, for example, where we don't know if the grant's coming or not, if it's going to be awarded or not. So we give them the limitation or the authority to spend the money. And then we say we want it unscheduled, though, until we know for sure the federal government's going to provide the dollars. And so budget management tracks that, and they just know when the money comes in, they can reschedule it and then allow the agency to spend it. Now, in the budget, you're going to run through a budget binder in a few minutes today to give you an example of what they look like and what kind of detail is there. But generally what we do is track expenditures by categories. We have 7 or 8 major categories that we look at. And these are broken down in the budget into more detail. We have a personal services category, which includes all the personnel costs, the wages, PERS, flexible health, medical benefits, Social Security taxes. Those are all built into the budget or identifiable in the budget. We have another category called services and supplies, and this is generally an agency's operational costs. That's non-personnel operational costs, except for professional service contracts. And there are a number of categories like travel, office supplies, rent, legal expenses, etc. We have a category of special payments, and this is statewide. It makes up a bulk of the total budget, and it's primarily because the state school fund is considered a special payment. It's a revenue transfer to local school districts. But there are other revenue transfers in budgets, like the Department of Human Services has quite a few.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Ken, would also be included in the special payment when you say it's the bulk of the money we appropriate. Does that include, like, to our county public health, county mental health? Is that all lumped into that same category of special payment?
Mr. Chair, Senator Westland, yes, those are also included in that category. Yes.
And am I correct, that's about 72-74%?
It's very close to that. It ranges in the 65-75 range, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
We have a category of capital outlay, and this is purchases of products with a value of more than $5,000 and a life of more than 2 years. At one time, this included most computer-type purchases. Recently, however, because of the drop in prices of computers, they are now included in the services and supplies category as expendable property. But capital outlay is meant to capture large-type purchases of an agency, so those are split out separately. We also have two kinds of construction categories. Capital improvement, this is construction, remodel, or improvement costs of $500,000 or less for a single project. And then there is major construction acquisition, or sometimes it's called capital construction, and that's similar to capital improvement, but it's for over $500,000. And these are the projects, the capital improvement are included in the agency's budget, directly in the budget bill. Major construction or capital construction is included in a different bill, and the reason for that is that they generally get a 6-year time period in order to complete the project or to spend the dollars approved for a capital construction project. And then finally, we track debt service separately, which is the principal and interest payments on bonds and certificates of participation. Currently, we have about $325 million in general fund, lottery fund debt service for 2003-05, and that's based on those currently issued debt instruments. That debt service will go up in 2005-07 to about $350 million. And that does not include any of the proposals in the governor's budget for additional projects. That's just for currently issued debt. We also track FTE and positions in the budget. An FTE, you'll hear a lot. It stands for full-time equivalent. And basically, it's the portion of a 24-month position that it's It's the portion of the 24-month budget period that a position is going to exist for, based on the number of hours it's scheduled to work. So if you have a position, a full-time position, that's going to start July 1st of 2006, that is a 0.5 FTE. If you have a position that is a permanent position for the entire biennium, starts July 1st of 05 and goes through June 30th of 07, but it only works 20 hours a week, that's also a 0.5 FTE. And right now there's a we do have a statutory limit on the number of positions in the state. It's 1.5% of the state's population of the previous year. So we keep track to make sure that we're not exceeding that limit. And we also, as you probably know, we currently have a spending limit too, which is 8% of the projected biennial personal income for the next two-year period. As I mentioned, we have a paper in that tab 2 on positions, which describes some of the nuances of positions. There are a variety of different kinds. There's permanent, there's limited duration, part-time, full-time, seasonal, temporary, and all of those are explained in that paper. Probably the most important thing to realize about a limited duration position is that it's only for the current two-year budget cycle or for whatever period of time the legislature has determined that it would be in place. And so it goes away and the agency has to come back and ask to have it reinstituted if they need that position. In our system, the appropriation bills are the budgetary control, and they are put into session law, into Oregon laws. After the bill is passed, it becomes part of Oregon laws. And if, as you will see, appropriation bills are not detailed to the expenditure category level, so you'll never see a certain limitation on the amount of dollars an agency spends for like out-of-state travel or something like that. That does not appear in the budget bill. What you will see, though, is appropriation bills are broken up by fund type, and it varies. They may be by the total agency amount or detailed to a program within an agency. And that depends on how Ways and Means puts the bill out. Now, for example, here's House Bill 5003, which is the Department of Agriculture's budget. And that's all it is. That's the budget for the department. You will get a binder about that thick with details on this budget, but by law, this is the only thing that restricts the agency, this piece of paper. And in this case, Section 1 says that the Department of Ag gets $17.9 million of general fund. So by law, they can use that to do whatever they're authorized to do by as the Department of Ag, but there is no restrictions in the bill exactly on how they do that.
And,
now,
Chair?
Yes, Senator Wessel.
And then just so Senator Schrader understands this, the 5,000 series are House chaired committees and the 55 are Senate chaired committees. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator Westland, no, because of the joint nature of the committee, the bills, it does not matter. The bills will go to a subcommittee based on the subject matter of the bill. So the Department of Ag bill, it just so happens Representative Morgan is chairing the Natural Resources sub, and she will get this bill in her sub. But it does not matter. It's not broken up that way.
But
what it does mean...
It originate from the House or the Senate.
What it does mean, yes. What it means is the bill will first go to the House floor if it's a House bill.
Okay.
And then it comes back to committee, and if the co-chairs so decide, then it just goes straight to the Senate. So because of the joint nature of the committee, you don't have to have double hearings that way.
Senator Ferrier, was that helpful?
Yeah, it showed that Senator Westland needs to attend all these meetings.
Thank you.
Well, Mr.
Yeah, Senator Walker.
This is what, my seventh year, I think, in the legislature. It's the first time I learned that. So I do appreciate the comment by the good senator. He's the mountain.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Now, just to show you a different approach than having all of the general fund or all of the other funds just in one lump sum is here's the bill for the Department of Forestry. And you can see here there's much more detail in the bill. You may not be able to see, but there's much more detail. For example, in the Forestry Department's general fund is split into four categories: agency administration, protection from fire, private and community forests, and debt service. So by the structure of this bill, that means the agency, without emergency board approval during the interim, could not move money from protection and fire to private and community forests. They would have to spend it within those silos. And one other example is the Department of Transportation, which, as you may be able to see, has a number of breakouts: capital improvement, maintenance and emergency relief, preservation program, bridge program, highway safety program, etc. So, and that level of detail is entirely up to Ways and Means how they want to do that. One other thing that you will see, and we don't have a copy, but when you look at the budget binder in a few minutes, the budget reports from the last session are always included in the budget binder in the budget book. And these budget reports will go with the bill to the floor, and it provides information on the budget. Generally, they discuss the revenues that the agency has. It talks about the discussion that Ways and Means had on the agency's budget, and also includes the infamous budget notes when the co-chairs allow them to be put into a budget report. Budget notes have to be dealt with carefully because they cannot be a replacement for a bill. They can, if it's direction that's tied to the budget, they can be included in the budget report as a direction to the agency. But they do not have the force of law. Agencies generally try to abide by budget notes because they know they have to come back in front of the legislature in 2 years. So they try to abide by them, but they do not have the force of law. And the other, finally, for my part of this, the other thing that you're going to hear a lot about in Ways and Means subcommittees are the drivers of budget change. And this is a list here of the primary ones: population growth, demographics, inflation, health care, mandated caseload, federal policy changes, lawsuits, initiatives and policy decisions the state makes. Not all of these affect every agency, of course, but if they do, we're expecting the agency to tell you about which of these is causing their costs to go up, go down, or whatever.
Representative Morgan.
Mr. Rocco, can you talk to the committee members a little bit about the issue around maintenance of effort with federal funds?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan. Maintenance of effort is an issue in some agencies that get federal dollars. And basically what it says is that, they differ by agency, but generally what it says is that the state has to provide the same level of support that it did in the past in order to continue to get that level of federal dollars. So in some cases, I know the Department of Education went through a very intensive process this interim to make sure they were meeting maintenance of effort requirements, because if you don't meet it, then you have to give the federal funds back or you don't get the same level of federal funds in the future. And so that's another issue that agencies will talk to you about when they come forward.
Any other questions? Senator Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ken, will we be addressing certificates of participation in a future bonding session?
Mr. Chair, Senator Morris, yes, I believe Thursday we're going to have the treasurer and an individual from Department of Administrative Services talk about bonding and debt, and included in that would be certificates of participation.
I'll hold my question. That's later. Thank you.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Rocco, you said that without any change in our debt increase, we're going to be changing there's going to be an increase in debt service from about $325 million to $350 million.
Yes.
And so that's about, a 7.3 or whatever percent increase in interest rates over the last biennium without any additional indebtedness, and yet the governor's budget does increase, some additional use of COPs and other things. I would just like to mention that the more we go into debt, the more that it's going to affect our long-term utilization of funds, because as interest rates go up, that's going to drain money that we could use elsewhere, and I hope we'll be very careful not to further indebt the state on a long-term basis unless absolutely necessary.
Mr. Chair and Representative Richardson, that's a good point, and it also is a function of how some debt is incurred by the state. Sometimes you can pass a proposal to bond for something and have no debt, no cost for your current 2-year period, and that makes it good for today's budget, but it makes it difficult for tomorrow's budget, because in the next cycle you end up paying the full 2-year amount of debt service. And that's another reason why we've increased from 325 to 350, because we did do some of that last session. So Larry now is going to talk about the Ways and Means process. So.
Attention of the chair right here. Thank you, Ken. Other questions? Oh, Senator Devlin.
Yeah. Mr. Rocco, this is not really a question, but it was in regard to the statement about debt service and managing the state's debt. Part of that discussion in the last session was we actually did get voter approval to issue some general obligation bonds for our PERS liabilities. There are some of us that believe that we should have converted some of our other instruments to general obligation bonds and availed ourselves of some of the lowest interest rates in history. And when those would have not been variable, those would have been fixed. And by properly managing the debt, we could have saved money in the future also. And we didn't choose to in some cases.
Thank you.
Senator
Winters.
Just a question. Mr. Rocco, when did we begin doing certificates of participation?
Larry.
Yeah, and maybe if it's something that you can answer quickly, Larry, but this is an issue we're going to be discussing in a lot more detail on Thursday. So.
Yeah, that's correct. I would be unable to give you a specific date at this notice, but I believe that'll be discussed on Thursday.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Wilson.
Mr. Chair, are we going to discuss the e-board and how that works, and is there any statutory requirement for how much is in the emergency funding? Is that part of the curriculum for 101?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wisner, we weren't intending on discussing that at this point, but I can just tell you there's no requirement of an emergency fund of any size. Generally, in the last 3 biennia, it's been right around $40 million. This time, there was also about $56 million in what we call special purpose appropriations, in addition to the $40 million that was for general purpose use. The special purpose appropriations you will see in budgets, usually they're put in if you don't know exact, for example, you have a possible caseload increase coming and you don't know for sure if it's going to materialize, you may
allocate a certain amount of dollars to the emergency board to cover that potential caseload increase. And then the agency will come to the emergency board to with documentation saying yes, that has occurred, or no, it hasn't, and then the e-board decides. If the money isn't used for that caseload at a certain date, it reverts to general purpose use. And I think we had a number of those revert this time because of the we did provide that $56 million in a special purpose appropriations. I think we reverted about $18 million to the general purpose e-fund because they weren't needed for what those specified uses were.
I'll seek some outside tutoring for my e-board class.
We'd be glad to talk to you about the emergency board process. And also on our website, we post during the interim, we post the agenda, the analysis that we do of each item, the minutes after the meeting, and we do a summary of what the e-board did and send that to all members.
Okay. Anything further? Okay, so make note, Senator Schrader, it's about 35, 40 minutes when the coffee kicks in. People start to...
Thanks. Larry Nicewinder, Deputy of Legislative Fiscal Office. I'm just going to spend the next few minutes here, actually about 9 slides, talking to you in general about the Ways and Means process, and then Sheila Baker will come up and talk to you about the budget notebooks, and that'll end today's part of the orientation. Just in advance. The Ways and Means process is governed by statute. This statute requires that the Senate and House committees do establish a committee on Ways and Means, and that they meet jointly. The President and the Speaker may establish additional committees for review, and as you will recall, during 2003, both House and Senate committees did that. The statute also, if you read it, requires that they each appoint at least 8 members from each side, at least 2 of which have from each side that have previous Ways and Means experience. This session, as you're aware, there's 20 members on the full committee, 10 senators, 10 House members, and then there's an additional 7 that are serving on subcommittees only. The statute also requires that the chairs of the committee, in this case the co-chairs of Ways and Means, alternate the presiding the role of being presiding officers. Additionally, the chairs are also authorized to cause investigations by the committee or selected subcommittee of any complaints about the management or conduct of any of the state agencies, officers, or activities where they are have received state-appropriated money. So rather broad authority. Oops, back one here. Okay. LFO's review process. As you recall probably from the opening comments, Ken made, you know, we're a staff of 17 that are professional, nonpartisan staff. And from introduction, you have to meet everybody. We work very closely with the Budget Management Office and their agency staff during the budget development phase. This is a process that started clear back last March. For 0507, as Ken indicated, these agencies have had to start developing budgets, you know, 28 months out ahead. They had a kickoff meeting for agencies in March where they were given detailed budget instructions on how to build their 0507 budget and have been working on that ever since. Around August or September, they were required to turn in an agency request budget to the Department of Administrative Services. So we receive copies of those. And have a chance to shadow the process. And at this point, we've received most of the agency request budgets. We're starting to receive some of the governor's recommended budgets. So if you haven't been into our office, want to see shelves full of budget notebooks and get a little bit familiar with some of the agencies, those are in there. As your budgets come up in your subcommittees, you'll be provided with a copy of the notebook. So that you'll have one to take with you back to your office or have your staff assist you with in reviewing. But right now, we probably only have a half a dozen, maybe 10 agencies where we've actually got the governor's recommended notebook.
Larry, just hold up a minute, Senator Furner.
How many budget management staff are there? Just roughly.
Analyst staff, probably close to 25, 30.
We have 17.
Actually, analysts, we have 11 budget analysts.
Okay.
So,
did we get the governor's budget on December 1st?
He released it on December 1st. We were provided some confidential copies of agency information prior to that. But comprehensive list, we got what you got on December 1st.
So we got it. So the 3 weeks was shortened a little bit.
Correct. It's even shorter when there's a re-election that occurs. But, he did release it on December 1st. We did receive some advanced copies of analyst reports and appeals notices confidentially prior to that. So,
Senator Winters?
No, I was...
So, his release reflects his priorities as framed by some of the policies that are set in statute. So, but the priorities in terms of where the budget spent, that's something he has latitude to do. We begin that analysis of the governor's budget as soon as we get it. Start developing explanatory materials for you. And analysts are now still working on background for that for the session agencies that are going to come up early. As a part of that, we've produced a couple documents that came out last week. Hopefully you all got that delivered to your office. This is a detailed analysis of each agency's budget. It gives you a brief description of their agency's functions, their revenue sources, the budget environment that they're in, a little background on what's happened in recent biennium with their budget. Summarizes how the fund types they have, the positions that they have, the number of positions, and then the governor's budget. It goes into what did the governor's budget reduce, what did it add, anything specific that we've been able to discern early on about that. We highly recommend that you review those things because these will be handed out also in subcommittee, but anything you do in advance to get up to speed on your agencies, that's a very useful tool. The second thing we've issued, and you should have also gotten, was a summary analysis. So strongly encourage you to look at this as well. This is a statewide summary that gives you an overview of what did the governor do? What did he deliver to you? What revenue sources, what major reductions, what major increases occur, any changes in the revenue sources that are relied upon, and an indication is that maybe some of the budget-related legislation that might be of interest to you. So here we are. Last week we began this session, second Monday, and we began sitting down with the co-chairs and trying to line out a process for you guys to follow and the subcommittees and assign various budgets. In addition to issuing this, trying to outline the major issues. And just so you know, those issues are going to fall into three basic areas because that's where the bulk of the money is: human services, public safety, and education. Nearly 60% of the state's general fund is in the education area, and when you combine those three program areas, we have over 90% of the state's resources. So we spend the bulk of our time in those three areas. The major reductions and stuff, as I indicated, if you look in this book on page 11, you'll see a table that sort of tells you on one sheet where the major increases and reductions occur. Revenue reductions or increases. On page 5 of this, we'll talk a little bit about what were the revenue sources that we were relied upon in 03-05 and which ones aren't there this biennium, about $600 million. And then any revenue increases. It also tells you on that page about $180 million that the governor's budget relies upon that's not in the December forecast, for instance. So very useful tool. I think it helps you set the stage. We also talk about key budget-related legislation in some of our opening orientations with members and subcommittees. Those things can be in any of the substantive committees that some of you serve on, and other things are that we try to get our hands on are fee bills. This session, there are about 13 agencies that have proposed fee increases or proposed fees to be established, and another 14 agencies that have fee increases that they were administratively able to increase during the interim that they'll be asking this body to ratify. So those are all issues that will come up in the context of these briefings, both here and in subcommittees. We are beginning to work with your co-chairs and leaders to establish the priorities and the timelines for session. Early in session, this is sort of a focus on what are the principles you want to use? What are the review processes that you want the committee to use? When do you want prioritized lists to be discussed? What kind of revenue assumptions are we relying upon? What kind of reduction targets do we need to establish? What kind of ending balance goals do we want to have? What are the performance expectations? What outcomes have we seen and would we like to see? Given what kind of subcommittee parameters do we want the subcommittees to have? And deciding when the budgets will move out of Ways and Means. What's the timeline? And so all those things are parts of our early discussion, and you'll be getting more direction from the co-chairs as some of those decisions are made. As you recall, in 2003, those decisions, we did a lot of things very creatively to try and balance the budget. We'd already gone through five special sessions, a sixth one during session, and so we did a lot of things to try and make sure we balanced the 305 budget. That involved pay freezes, PERS reforms. We did use prioritized lists. We eliminated a lot of positions. So those are the things that set the stage for where we are today. We'll have more fun this session with new items in those areas, I'm sure. As in past sessions, the subcommittee, this committee is broken down into six subcommittees. And each of you are assigned to one of them with the seven exceptions I talked about. Those subcommittees have anywhere from 5 to 8 members on them. And the chairs are in an alternating position. So in this biennium, Senator Winters was the chair of the Human Services last time, so we have Representative Richardson doing it this time. And so each of those committees have been flopped in terms of their responsibilities, who the chair is. This is where, in the past, where the in-depth review of the budgets has occurred, we expect a lot of it to occur this time. We're going to review the budget-related legislation there. You guys will be operating within some guidelines. Considering the priorities and targets that will be established for you. The co-chairs are talking about changing the process a little bit from previous biennium. In fact, I think we talked about a little bit of a revolution last Friday. So there'll be more direction about how that will change the sequence of events later this week, probably. In the past, we've moved smaller budgets out first and the assessment agencies out first. That may not be the case this biennium, we'll talk more about that once those decisions are made. But in general, the subcommittees will work through the budget process, present those, have those hearings, make recommendations to the full committee, and the full committee will take action, moving those items to the floor. In terms of our role in this process, again, public hearings are going to be held for every one of those 90 to 100 agency budgets that are before the committee. During those, our office will provide a lot of orientation and background and information for you guys to try and set the stage. Additionally, there will be a role for, in many agencies' cases, or at least by program area, for a governor's policy advisor or a DAS budget and management person to give you some information. But our objective in providing the information, summarizing the role and mission, the major issues, providing our analysis, outlining the cost drivers, is to give you an objective, factual, comprehensive background, really set the stage for the detailed deliberations and prioritization that you guys will be doing. Sort of set the stage before you find out more about what the governor's budget did and why. Give you the best information we can. As far as the presentations, to make them as informative as they can be, to have as consistency, the consistency that we want you guys to have, agencies have been given some specific guidelines on what to present. And tomorrow, in a very brief session, we will have one of our analysts come in and talk to you about those presentation guidelines so that you'll have a sense of what you're going to be getting from agencies, what they've been asked to do and given and provide to you, at least in written form.
Senator Frater. Just a point, the co-chairs have discussed, and we'll see how it comes out, about having a very abbreviated presentation compared to past sessions in terms of the agency's oral presentation to members. Within their budget binder, however, will be all the information that Larry is discussing, and you will be encouraged to read that in some detail, because you're going to be trying to get to the priorities of the budget and the outcome discussion early in this legislative session. Each of these agencies, so subcommittees, can begin their prioritization process, and then there'll be another opportunity probably for more in-depth discussion and going into some of the binder information that maybe you didn't get to ask at their first blush.
And I think the major point there is, although we need to hear, you know, from the agencies what they've been doing, what they are, and the importance of the work they're doing, we also want to make sure that we have plenty of time for that kind of dialogue, so that we can get down into the details necessary to set these priorities. So although we appreciate the work, you know, that they are doing and that they want to talk about that for us, you know, our issues are, you know, how much is it going to cost us for the programs that we want to set priorities for?
Co-chairs?
Representative Richardson.
My understanding is that there was a January 14th date for us to receive a written response as far as the outline for the various agencies. I'm wondering if that's been received.
Chair and committee members, there was a January 14th deadline for agencies to submit their prioritized list of services. We did receive, I'd say, probably over half of those by last Friday, and analysts are working on those that they received now, giving them feedback on those and reviewing them. And we'll be following up with those that may not have met the time frame. But that was a deadline for those. They are also required to give us hard copies of their agency presentation prior to coming in to Ways and Means, at least 1 week. We want to see it within a month of before they actually come up in your subcommittee in draft form, and then a final copy a week before. So that we have a chance to make sure that what you're getting is complete, accurate, and to the point.
And I think from the co-chair's perspective, we're trying to get that schedule finalized as quickly as we can so we can get those notices out to the agencies when they're actually scheduled for two reasons. One, obviously, so that they're prepared and they can get us the information soon, too. But also, we need to emphasize that we're not going to be holding hearings for those agencies that choose not to participate at that level. I mean, we have to have that information, and we're just not looking to schedule hearings on agencies that are not providing us that information. Senator Whitaker.
Mr. Chair, you talked about the hearings with the agencies. How comprehensive or how detailed are you going to have hearings with respect to the public? Because those are two different hearings.
Right. I think what we're looking at is having presentations by the agencies, discussions about their priorities, what they feel are their priorities. We'll then have opportunity for public input into those priorities. Then the next time the subcommittee meets on that particular agency or program, it will be the subcommittee coming back saying what they've worked through with the agencies on priorities, and an opportunity for public input at that point. And then pretty much after that, it's going into just the, lack of a better term, work session for the subcommittee to iron out those priorities, start meshing, you know, not just what an agency's priorities are, but then also how does that fit within that entire subcommittee's area of responsibility. And then from that point, it goes to work among the subcommittees and the co-chairs to blend it all, you know, at a statewide level. So that's a real nutshell of what we're looking at.
Is a part of the planning also to have some of the hearings outside of this building?
It is. And I think what we're looking at, what we're discussing now, is the best way that we can provide not only information to the public and get input from the public at different locations, but the best way to do it, whether it's at the subcommittee level or something that we're talking about, is some opportunities where the full Ways and Means Committee can go outside the building and gain public or receive public input on some broader issues. At the same time, we're also showing them some of the budgets that we're passing out, because what we're trying to deal with is how subcommittees are the ones typically gathering the information. They're the ones seeking the input, and yet, from a public perspective, we're also trying to show that the entire committee is wanting to participate at this level. So, again, we're just going through that at this point. We'll have some more for you as we go through the next couple of weeks.
And as the information is available, we will be putting together schedules for each of the subcommittee that each of you have a chance to review, so you'll have a sense of where we're going. Just know that as the process proceeds, as there's reviews of the prioritized lists and agencies' presentations, that there will be opportunities during the public hearing process for you as members to have questions you have answered, responded to. That's part of our role, is to facilitate you getting answers to your questions. We will, as a part of the wrap-up, make sure that we reiterate for you the issues before the committee and the major decisions that are that the subcommittee needs to wrestle with. Long before we get to work session, these issues will be well discussed, both with you and with the public.
Senator Devlin.
This is almost a rhetorical question, but which agency is going to submit a priority listing for from 42 to 45% of the budget, the state school fund?
Well, the rhetorical answer is Department of Education.
That may be more rhetorical than parties would think. I'll leave it at that.
Just briefly wanted to talk to you a little bit about our role in the process. We do review, and analysts are doing this, have been doing this since the budget was starting to be developed this last spring and fall. We review the base budget for its accuracy, anything and everything that's in that budget. The budget that was approved last session has been moved along through e-board actions or phase-in of programs and things of that nature. We're looking to see if the agencies are doing it technically correct, carrying out the legislative intent. We're looking at anything that's included in that budget. They were given instructions as to what to include in terms of phasing in of programs, phasing out of programs that were supposed to go away, any other factors that the budget instructions allow them to include, for instance, of an inflationary allowance factor, anything that affects they have vacancy calculations they have to make. They have to include price list changes, for instance, that are their assessments that are passed on to them. Mandated caseload changes. Our analysts are looking at every stage of that to get familiar with it, understand what's in it, question it, and be able to explain it to you in subcommittee. We review the revenue sources that are relied upon in their budgets. We assess the reasonableness of the assumptions of the revenue that's being relied upon, wanting to make sure that it reflects legislative intent. We look to see that the staffing levels that are in there are justified and consistent with what was previously approved. Agencies are asked to provide 10% reductions lists, and we review the impact of those reductions, are familiar with those, develop assessment of whether or not we concur with the priority orders that they would put those in. Agencies, when they build their budget, if they want to do anything to enhance a program or significantly change it, they got to put it in a policy package. So if you hear people talking about policy packages, this is something that is put before you as something new or different. It's an enhancement. It's a reduction. It's something new. We are doing analysis of those as well. As I mentioned earlier, we will facilitate responses to questions and collect information as we can to help you guys move the process along. As I mentioned earlier, as being nonpartisan professional staff, we make recommendations. We will make recommendations on each aspect of the budget. Some of that is our professional recommendation. Others will be recommendations, and we'll tell you that they are recommendations necessary to carry out either a co-chair's priority budget, subcommittee's prioritized budget, leadership budget. We will tell you the necessary steps to do that. And then we facilitate the bill amendments. We do a budget report that Ken talked about earlier, and we assist you guys in your presentation of the budgets on the floor. Just a little bit of background. I know that some of you are on substantive committees. Question comes up as we review bills. You know, what's the impact of those bills on ways and means process? Any bill that's in any substantive committee that has any general fund or lottery impact definitely has an interest to us, and we'll need a referral to ways and means. If there is going to be any appropriation of general fund dollars contained in those bills, That's the way it gets included in the budget. There's no way that position authority is established unless it comes through Ways and Means and a budget report is developed, for instance. So we're watching the bills very closely, looking for those that need subsequent referral, and working with the desks to try and make sure that those things occur. We'll also work with you if you're on substantive committees with your committee staff to make sure that they're aware of any fiscal concerns that we have and the need for it to come through Ways and Means.
Senator Winters.
Larry, doesn't federal changes also have some implication for if you're doing something that has been approved but you change it, has an implication of coming to Ways and Means as well?
Senator Winters, anytime the budget would need to reflect significant increase in federal funds expenditure authority, or if they need additional position authority to carry out those programs, yes. There are bills that can have those impacts. If the budget hasn't gone out of Ways and Means, there are ways that we can incorporate the effect of that bill in the budget bill when it does go out. Or we also have the opportunity, as Ken mentioned earlier, to address limitation needs at the emergency board subsequent session. But we try to do as much as we can during session.
I'm thinking in terms of the Medical Modernization Act coming down from the feds. It'll have significant changes within... And those changes would then, if it's done by the Substance Committee, would then come to Ways and Means, wouldn't they?
Yes, co-chairs and Senator Winters, that one is major. There's major impact both cost-wise and savings to be captured, and we would want to marry that up with the budget. And there are lots of nuances to that. So, yes, we would like to have those kinds of bills down here because it is a major cost driver in the Human Services budget. Wherever there's a significant increase in limitation, the other funds and federal funds, and especially where position authority is involved, we do try to get the bills to Ways and Means so that we can, in fact, marry it up to the budget, make it work. Once in Ways and Means, the co-chairs will be reviewing those bills and assigning them to the various subcommittees. So right now the focus is going to be on the budget bills, but as session goes on, there will be budget-related bills, substantive bills that have been referred that you will be assigned and asked to review and move on out of the Ways and Means process to the floor. We, as a part of that process, will address the fiscal impacts of the bill. We will refine that. In some cases, there's ways that the fiscal impacts of those bills can be reduced. We'll look for ways to do that. We work with the chair of the committee that sent it to us if there is anything substantive that the Ways and Means Committee is entertaining so that we have their concurrence. The final slide. How do we get out of here? In previous sessions, you know, the Joint Ways and Means process begins its final deliberations in mid to late May. We don't expect that to be a lot different this time. What we do expect is that we're going to primarily rely on the March forecast rather than the May forecast for most of the budget discussions, so that we have most everything decided by that time. When the May forecast comes out, put any finishing touches on the budget, hopefully set aside funds for contingencies. But the May forecast will be out before the session is over. We also get April prison population forecasts. We also do some final reworks on the Department of Human Services budget. Ultimately adopt the legislatively adopted budget in its entirety prior to sine die. I would look.
Larry, you didn't put a date on that sine die.
Fine print. We hope to have a schedule for you guys soon.
Sure.
That's it. For
question, Senator Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Larry, the old reference was current service level. And now the new reference seems to be essential budget level. Could you explain the nuances and the difference between the two?
It's really a change in terminology. The essential budget level, in all respects, is the same as the current service level budget. What does it cost to continue previously approved programs and activities for another 2 years? And it's a number that we are statutorily required to develop. It's a number that various parties to the legislative process want us to develop and provide to them. It gives a measuring stick of, you know, can we afford to continue doing what we're doing or can we not? And when you, if you look at the current service level budget and say what would it take to continue in 0507, what we did in 0305, the revenue sources were approximately a billion short of doing that. So that's why the prioritized lists and the reduction options become so important. But it's essentially the same as a current service level budget. It's just, it's the technical term. We use essential budget packages to determine what is that value of to continue those services, and that's the term we use.
Thank you.
Good point, Senator, and I like what Larry just said. Is, I mean, maybe we look at the definition that it's essentially the same as the current service level, but it doesn't mean that that budget level is essential, you know, to, for purposes that we're looking at.
Correct.
Yeah. Other questions, Larry? All right. Thank you very much, Sheila Baker.
Good morning. There are things being passed out to you as you're waiting for me to start here. One will be a budget binder. It's a sample budget binder. We ask that you please not write in them because these will be used by the subcommittee that are taking up these budgets. One is for the State Board of Nursing and one is for the Long-Term Care Ombudsman, I believe. But I just want to walk you through the materials and the layout of those binders. But again, please don't mark them up, and then go ahead and leave them at your place when you're done, and we'll pick them up and make sure they're available for the subcommittee when they get to those budgets. The second piece that's being passed out is an outline from the budget document, instructions that the agencies received, and I'll be walking through that as well so that you can see again, what's where in these budget binders. And when we're done with this, or in advance if you want, these go behind tab 2 in the consolidated binder that you will have for the materials for these overviews. So that's the appropriate placement, tab 2.
In which?
In the big fat binder that I believe you got at the start of the morning. I'm not sure our goal is to entirely fill that binder by the end of this overview, but we'll probably do a good job of it. All right. What this budget document binder is additional materials that will be available to you as we're going through the budget hearings. They are not all available now. This document is produced after the agency has completed all the reconciliations and slotting numbers in the right places from the governor's budget decision into the automated budget information system, ORBIT. And those pieces then go into this binder as well as agency materials. These binders are not all the same. There is a common framework that they've been told to work within, but agencies do have latitude to add additional things, make them look prettier or uglier, as the case may be. So they do have some variability in those binders. So something that you see in one agency's budget binder, you may not see in another agency's budget binder. Generally, except for some small agencies, generally in the subcommittee, we won't be working directly from these binders. But again, it has some useful information in it that you can look at outside a subcommittee or during subcommittee or when you need questions answered. Generally, and I'll move now to this outline and to the budget document binder itself. The agencies that we have given you are relatively small agencies. When you look at, for example, a Department of Human Services, you have, for their budget material itself, you have two big thick binders of the budget material and then about two big thick binders of automated budget information system material. So it gets very convoluted very fast. And I would say right up front, if you need help working through the Orbitz documentation, the automated budget system documentation, we're there and happy to help you do that, because it is a budget system. It's not, there are reports that are available. There's information we can get, but the reports in and of themselves, if you're not used to the system, may be difficult to work through and find precisely what you want because of how they're set up and because of when and how the information goes into that system. So, again, if you're interested in the budget information system information, then we'll help you work through that if you have questions. Okay. So the budget binder starts off with a table of contents, pretty self-explanatory. And then there's a certification page. So the agency head or the commission head has to sign that this is the budget documentation that they have prepared, that the agency has prepared and put together. The first tab in your budget should be legislative action. Now, some agencies will include their budget bill from last session in this. That's an option. But what they do need to include is the budget report from the last session and any and documentation of any emergency board actions that have happened during the interim. So if, for example, like me, you can't remember for a particular agency, okay, what happened? I know we did something about something, but I don't remember when and exactly what. You can go into this binder and find the emergency board minutes that pertain to that. Or if you're thinking, if you were here last time around, you're thinking, I know we did a budget note for them, but I don't quite remember the context, then that information would be in their budget report as well. The next tab is the agency summary tab, and this is getting into the real meat of the current budget document. There's an agency summary narrative. Who are we? Why are we here sort of thing. They will probably have a couple charts and graphs that show what their budget looks like. So funding sources, how their money's spent, sometimes how their programs are divvied up if they have more than one program, how their budget is spread out among those programs. Some will have a comparison between the last budget and the governor's budgets that's being proposed. There's a discussion of the mission statement and the statutory authority. They are also required to provide information on their long-term plans. So there's a discussion of their six-year plan for the agency as well as the two-year plan for the agency. So you get a little more long-term philosophical programmatic discussion than you do rather than just looking at the budget numbers. They talk about how they made the decisions on the budget. What are the environmental factors that they've had to deal with? What are their strategies? What are their criteria for budget development? What are the things that they looked at in talking about in trying to decide what they ask for during this budget cycle? Now, these discussions generally do not address what the governor's decisions may have been relative to the agency's plans or the agency request. This is, again, a high-level discussion of where the agency plans are and where they thought they wanted to go. So after that information, you get into the...
Senator Walker?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I need a definition of the acronym ORBIT. Could you tell me?
Oregon Budget Information Technology System or something like that. It's the Automated Budget Information System, which is why I kept repeating Automated Budget Information System.
Well, that's why I'm asking you that, because we're talking two different things.
No,
it's
the same thing. ORBITS is the acronym for it. Automated Budget Information System is what it is.
Okay.
It's a statewide system. All agencies have to have their budget information input into that system. It's administered by the Department of Administrative Services, and it prepares the governor's budget. And it includes historical information that agencies put into that. That information gets audited. It's moved forward, adjusted for the agency request budget, and then adjusted again for the governor's budget decisions. So what we have at this point in time is a presentation of the numbers that are attached to the governor's budget and then some historical information along with that.
Okay. Thank you. That's helpful. So every agency has to submit a budget through ORBIT.
correct?
That is correct.
Okay. And it gets tweaked however it should be. But that's so that we know that all agencies are coming in here under the same system, being measured by the same standards, and going out the same way.
Right. All the numbers are treated similarly. And, I mean, the primary reason for having the statewide automated system is that those numbers can be rolled up and that you know at a statewide level what your budget expenditures are. So it's built on low-level agency information rolled up to an agency-wide level, and then the agency-wide level is rolled up to a statewide level.
Okay.
Sheila, what kind of budgets are we going to be reviewing that are not part of the Orbit system?
All of the agencies are part of the Orbit system. Now, they may have in-house spreadsheets that they use to put their information together to build it before they put it into the Orbit system, but all of the information gets input into Orbits, gets audited before it gets to us.
So education, the other fund agencies, the different agencies. Okay. Senator Morissette.
Thank you. This is online, in-house online.
The Orbit system is not a public access system. The agencies have access to it. We have access to certain reports, and when we get to the actual adjustments that the legislature wants to make, we'll be able to enter data at a very high-level category. But it's mostly a system that's available for the agencies and then Department of Administrative Services in terms of how the numbers get input, how they get it audited, and that kind of thing. It's not public information.
Yes, follow.
In that sense.
I think I'm mistaken, but I understood there was an upgrade of legislative computers in order to access that. I may be mistaken.
I'm not aware that individual legislator access is something that, it may be down the line. At this point, I don't believe that that's available.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you. Can you talk to me about what the status is with the Oregon University system and with Oregon Health Sciences University in relation to the Orbit system?
Maybe. My understanding is Oregon Health Science University, because it's not a state entity, does not have a budget in Orbit. The expenditures for that, I believe, go through Department of Administrative Services, but they do not build a budget in Orbits. The university system has a budget in Orbits. It is, however, different in the sense that they use their own internal systems to generate some of that information, and then it gets plugged into Orbits at a much higher level than most of the other agencies. And Steve Bender would be able to give you some additional information on how that works. But the actual expenditures do get plugged into the system so that they can be part of those statewide totals. Okay. Where I'm at now in the binder is a page that looks like this. This is their links to benchmarks and performance measures discussion. Each agency is required to have that, even though they may not link directly to high-level Oregon benchmarks. There are performance measure requirements for each agency. And so you should see information there that talk about what the agency goals are, what their performance measures are, where they were in 2002, where they expect to be or want to be in 2007, and then additional information about how those performance measures were modified, if they were during the interim, how their data is collected, what that data says. So this is significant information, and you'll have more of a presentation on the performance measures, I believe, tomorrow. But this is where it would be under the agency summary section in the budget binder, and it does present a lot of information about those performance measures, and again, where appropriate, links to the Oregon benchmarks. There needs to be a discussion of their major technology initiatives, if there are any, for the agency. They also have to talk about dispute resolution and what they're doing in terms of inmate work opportunities, again, if that's applicable. And then we get to a summary of 2005-07 budget form. Looks like this. This
page,
is
what's your page?
Well, in the Board of Nursing budget, if that's what you have, it's page 37. It should be towards the back end of the agency summary before you get to a sustainability or a revenue tab. Find it? Okay. This is useful information in that it shows you how they got to the governor's budget from the 2003-05 legislative adopted budget. Again, at a very high level, they provide this at the agency summary level and then at what we call program units or the budget building block levels as well. But the first page would be the agency summary page. It walks you through where they started, what the base budget adjustments were, what those essential packages were to get to the essential budget level. And again, the discussion was essential means what it means to continue services for the next 2 years for the legislatively approved programs. Then the next page shows what policy packages, if any, were affecting the budget and get you to a bottom line and a percent change number. So again, it gives you a good overview of the steps from 2003-2005 to the 2005-2007 governor's proposed budget. Then it moves into reduction options. So agencies are required to identify reduction options. We've asked them to do that regardless of fund type. And each agency will have some reduction options there. Now, one of the things that you should see as we're getting these budgets in is where the governor's budget has taken some of the reduction options that are on those lists. Those should be identified so that we know that's something that's not available for the legislature to take because the governor already made that reduction. So that should be, again, helpful information as we're moving through these budgets. Then there are organization charts, both their current and the proposed 2005-07, if there are changes in that. And most agencies probably will have some, could be minor, could be major changes in those organization charts. And these charts are supposed to include all the positions and FTE in the agency so that you can see where the differences might be. And then we get into the ORBITS system information. The first document that would be in this section is a summary of all the expenditures and the positions showing what the base budget is and all of the packages. And so that will be a multi-page report for, again, a large agency. It could be 20, 30, 50 pages. So my earlier comment, I would remind you of that. Please come to us and we'll help you walk through these because they can get confusing. And then the second report is a program unit summary, again, for the building blocks. For a smaller agency, they will probably have their budget as one program unit. So, for example, if you've got the Board of Nursing budget, page 47 shows the program unit, and it's all one. Their whole budget's in one budget structure. If you get into Department of Human Services, again, you've got 40 that you will be dealing with in the department. So the length and the size of the report will vary by agency, by the complexity of their fund type, and by the complexity of their budget structure. So that's the agency summary information. Now, the next section is there may be a tab for sustainability in the budget document. There may not. The governor issued an executive order in 2003 talking about sustainability, and agencies were to develop plans regarding sustainability of economic, environmental, and community well-being. It affects 20 of the biggest agencies in the state, natural resources agencies, economic agencies. It also affects corrections, the Department of Human Services. So the smaller budgets may have a tab that says sustainability doesn't apply to us, or they may not have a tab at all, as the Department of Nursing doesn't. But when we get into the bigger budgets, there should be a discussion of sustainability there, what those plans were, how they tie into the budget request and the budget decision making. The next section that all agencies will be a revenue section. And this talks about their revenue sources, general fund, dedicated other funds, federal funding, there to identify where their funds come from, you know, how those programs are funded, if there's a mix of funding, which programs get which, how is it determined, how is it estimated. Are there changes in the funding streams? That discussion needs to be there. There is a detail on fees, license, and assessment revenue that those agencies that have those are required to put in. So those forms should be in there to give you an idea of what kind of revenue the agencies get from that source. And then any proposed changes in fees or license revenue also needs to be talked about. So that should be highlighted in there. And then there are, again, two budget system reports, two ORBITS reports that talk about the lottery, other, and federal funds revenue. So it's a presentation of the summary information there. And then there's one that shows revenues and disbursements. So how much revenue do they have on hand? How much revenue is coming in? What goes out in expenditures? How much gets transferred out? And then what they have in terms of an ending balance. And again, depending on the agency, the complexity of their revenue, that section can be pretty fat or it can be relatively thin and straightforward. For larger agencies, then, the budget binder will then move from an agency perspective to the program unit perspective, to the individual building blocks. So it's additional detail at a lower level of what the programs are, how the numbers are put together. There will be additional ORBITS reports for those specific program units. So if you're interested in just one piece of the agency for answering a question or looking at the numbers, then that detail will be available to you. These two budgets that you have here are built just on one program unit, so they don't have to provide a separate program unit detail. They are all at the agency summary level. But again, when we get into the more complex agencies, you will see that additional detail. The next section is, again, specific to some agencies. Most agencies will not have it. That is a capital budgeting section. So if there's proposed capital construction or proposed bond financing or certificates of participation financing, there should be information in there, including a narrative discussion, some detail from the ORBIT system about the revenues and how that funding is divvied up. And then for those agencies that have capital construction, there's a six-year plan that is required of them. And so you will be able to see in their budget document what their plan is for the next 6 years. I'll use an example from one of my agencies in the past, the Oregon Youth Authority. In the mid-90s, when they were adding regional youth facilities, their six-year plan included development of those regional youth facilities. Now that they have those facilities, those six-year plans might include not necessarily new construction, but maintenance and upgrading and security additions or things like that. So there's various elements that will be described in those six-year plans. But again, if the agency is involved with capital budgeting, there will be a section in their budget binder about that and a discussion of that. And then we get into special reports, which would be the next tab. And all agencies should have something in this area. It may vary by agency. For example, the first special report you could see would be on major information technology projects and initiatives. Not all agencies will have that. Some will. So that information would be there. If they have a facility proposal that affects workspace requirements. For example, I don't know of any this time around, but if someone was proposing to build a new office building, that information would be in there. agencies will have an audit response report. If they've had a Secretary of State audit in the last couple of years, they need to provide information on what their response to that audit was, what they've done relative to that audit, and that's information that we would expect the subcommittee to talk about. And then all agencies are required to provide an affirmative action report, talking about what their affirmative action plan was, what their activities were, and how their staff representation splits up. And then in the back of the document, you will find more ORBITS pages from the budget information system that gives you different ways of slicing and dicing the budget information. And again, I would make a plea. Let us help you work through those if you are interested in looking through that. Again, there are different ways of slicing, dicing the information. There's timing issues in terms of when the information is in there and how it's presented, and we'd be able to give you more context to help you understand that. So that's basically what the budget binders look like. They will be available for the subcommittee members in the subcommittee room as we get them in. Again, they're not all in yet. Agencies are still going through their budget reconciliations of the governor's budget in the automated system. But we do expect that these will be in here before any agency starts its budget hearing. It's additional information you'll have available to you, and if you have questions and need additional detail from what's in the budget binder or want to follow up on something, we can help you do that with the agency.
Any questions for Sheila? So on the budget binders that are in the subcommittee hearing rooms, once you have them put together, then they just stay in the hearing rooms so that the members can access them anytime?
Yeah, the budget binders will be in the hearing rooms after we get them in. You're welcome to take them to your office, look at them. Just be sure and bring them back so that you will have them during the committee hearings.
And not right
in and
but these
you
binders
can
stay here.
These sample binders stay here today. Once you have your budget binder for your agency and your subcommittee, you're welcome to write in them, take whatever notes that you want in those. They're your documents, and at least in the past, we've put members' names on the binder so you know who's or who, and you're not like with Little League baseball caps, you know, whose hat is this kind of thing. So.
Okay. Senator Walker, do you have anything further?
No, I was going to ask about writing in the notebook. That's fine. She answered.
Okay. Representative Morgan.
Okay. One of the interesting things about being involved in this process is that you end up with this world-class collection of white three-ring binders if you're not careful. So moving this information and the binders back into the process so that everything can be recycled is important here.
Senator Westland.
And then this sheet, Sheila, goes behind tab 2,
right,
our previously handed out governor's budget.
The budget outline I was working from today, the budget document outline, can go behind tab 2 in your binder for this overview presentation.
Yeah,
I'm pretty covered.
The one that looks like this.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And question for the chairs. In regards to, and it's pertinent to what she's been briefing us on, in regards to detail, if a member has questions about detail expenditures, who are we writing checks to, and how much are those checks for, vendor contracts, those types of information which we typically don't see in a budget presentation. What is your preferred protocol for us members in asking for that information, number one, and what can we expect in terms of the response from the agencies while we're hearing some of these budgets? Because some of these budgets we hear rather quickly, these smaller budgets. So if you could address those for me, I'd appreciate it.
Sure. I guess the way we're looking at handling special requests of members is kind of setting priorities for the LFO staff and for agencies as well, that First of all, presiding officers have highest priority, then co-chairs request, then subcommittee chairs, then, and get through the detail here, Ken, you might help me, but subcommittee chairs and ranking members of subcommittees. Then it's other members of the subcommittees. Then it's substantive chairs and the ranking members of those substantive committees. And that from that point, then it's other members who aren't involved in Ways and Means or who are not subcommittee substantive chair committee chairs. And then it's the general public. So the whole point is that, you know, our mission is to produce a budget. And, you know, we need the information gathered, and we need our LFO staff focused on, you know, whatever it's going to take to fulfill that mission. So even though, you know, every member has legitimate questions and they want to get as much information as they can to make their own decisions, you know, we need to set these kind of priorities to make sure that we still satisfy our mission. Now, to the agencies, we do have kind of a different request for them, and it's something that's been difficult in the past, because it's very difficult for an agency getting a request from a member to say no, when, and yet, you know, here we are trying to get these budgets produced. We have our LFO staff calling over the agency for information, and the response is, well, gee, we'd love to help you, but we've got to first deal with a request from, you know, another representative or another senator. So, you know, our hope is that we'll get the agencies, you know, identifying those kinds of conflicts, that if, you know, that we do have a request from an LFO, basically trying to get issues resolved for their own specific budgets, that if they cannot give that a higher priority over a member, that they're then able to come back to LFO, tell CAN, if not, get to the co-chairs or get to the presiding officers to resolve that kind of conflict.
Well, Mr. Chair, if I may, it would seem to make sense that if individual members had questions with agencies, that they should come to LFO, come to the co-chairs, and then that information would be requested by LFO. It comes back to LFO and then is available for others to see, rather than just one member having that information and holding on to. I think it would be more useful and more helpful in the process.
Yeah, good point, Representative. And to that point, too, as subcommittee members sitting here today, if you do have requests, I'd suggest that you also go to your subcommittee chair with that request, so that they're in the loop, not only for knowing what your request is, but also maybe they can identify a way to get that information for you in an easier way. And two, you know, if it's something that they've not thought about it, or they've not understood the full impact of that decision or that issue, you know, you're giving them some information that's going to help them as they get through the subcommittees. Okay. Another question? All right. Anything further, Sheila?
No.
All right. Senator?
No, sir.
All right. I guess with that, then we're through for the day, and we'll be back here tomorrow at 8:30 a.m. For now, the committee is adjourned. Yeah.